continue, we had been talking about the clash between Emes and Shalom, about when and how was a person permitted to fudge the truth, Mipnei HaShalom, and to what extent is that the framework for our sugya hearing Subas for Ketzer Reaktim Mipnei HaShalom. And essentially, we had left off with a general question that do we assume that when we have a situation of Shalom, it's simply not one of the situations that's covered by the Midgar Sheker Terchak, it's just not a real Isser of mine. It's still right to be as honest as possible, but it's not an actual Isser that could justify neglecting Shalom. Or should we say, no, there is an Isser here. It's just that Shalom is powerful and can push away a lot of things, and it can push away pure commitment to Emes as well. Which we find, again, I just mentioned before we started, that the topic of Shalom as a sugya by itself and what things are pushed away from the Shalom is a huge topic. There's a lot to talk about in terms of that. There is a very striking tshuva, the Ramah in Siddur Aleph and his tshuvas, seems to say that this is an example of many things where Shalom just wins out over other Yisur. And he even describes there a scenario very hard to imagine how this could really ever be practical, that you could actually be motzi shemra on someone with Nehash Shalom, and you could slander someone with Nehash Shalom. Hard to believe how that's going to really be conducive to Shalom. So in fact, there were some Achronim, Rav Huttner among them, and also Avraham Weinfeld, who wrote the Tshuvas Leib Avraham, a very beautiful sefer of Tshuvas. So he and others feel that this is all misattribution, that the Ramah never meant this. Ramah never said this, and that this was something that the Shoel had asked the Ramah, the questioner had asked, and had ended up under the Ramah's heading. So whether or not that's an actual example or not, but the logic could still be true overall, that Shalom may simply be a powerful force and outweighs the Isser, but the Isser is still there. Or alternatively, we might say that the Isser really isn't here because it's not applicable under these circumstances. So far we talked about Nachmanides, such as the question of whether it's a mitzvah or mutter to be Mishanah Bnei HaShalom. And we also talked about whether one should have to try to avoid latent checker, as we saw some discussion about that. And we saw specifically in terms of our sugya, like Ketzer Reaktim Lifnei HaKala, so we left off with a discussion about the machlokes Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai at that point, and the suggestion that Beis Shammai should acknowledge that there's at least a heter to a lie of Nei HaShalom. And we mentioned the explanation that Beis Shammai feels that yes, if your back is really up to the wall, if you really were forced to say something, so then yes, it would be okay to say something not true with Nei HaShalom. But they feel you're not forced to say anything in this situation. Who told you to go jump in the middle of the circle and start saying something you don't believe in? Better to stick to that which you do believe in. So if that's shot in Beis Shammai, it comes out that Beis Hillel actually says you can make a preemptive strike, Laman HaShalom, and that itself is a quite interesting chiddush. So what other nafkaminas could you think of? Can you think of any other shaylos that may be affected by this question? Of whether it's or Hutra, so to speak, whether there is no Isser of Sheker at all in these situations, or whether it's an issue of Sheker, but just one that is permitted because of Shalom. Any further scenarios you could think of that might be affected by this issue? I'll mention one other discussion that comes up on our Gemara and Subis. I think we mentioned last time the sefer called Tov Roi, that's a collection of Rav Kook's writings and other places that are brought together in the Masechta. So commenting on our Daf and Subas, there is a machlokas between Rav Kook and an anonymous Chacham on the following issue. And it's actually also relevant to this past week's Parsha. Parsha's Vayera, we already saw, has some major relevance to this sugya. So there's another point, and it's an added relevance, that the Rambam, beginning of Hilchot Deis, so the Rambam has his famous golden mean, right? The Derech HaMitzvos. You're all familiar with this. The Rambam says that the ideal path in life is the middle point between extreme midos. You shouldn't be too much this way, you shouldn't be too much in that way. You should basically follow the middle. So that's connected to last week's parsha, because the Rambam writes that this is the Derech Hashem that's referred to in Parshas Vayera, when God says that He's going to select Avram because He's going to train His family to follow the Shavu Derech Hashem. So the Rambam said that's the Derech Hashem, this middle path. So in general, says the Rambam, we should always try to have a balanced attitude, a balanced point of view. But there is also an acknowledgement, something that Vilna Gaon talked about in others, that sometimes you have to go to an extreme if you're already at the other extreme. If you need to average out into the middle again. So it might be appropriate for someone to go to the extreme of Amida in order to swing back so that he pulls himself away from the opposite extreme. So working off that premise, the anonymous Chacham, who Rav Kook quotes, says as follows. He says, the heter l'shanos b'fnei hashalom, this idea that you can fudge the truth for the sake of peace, he says, who's that talking about? That's talking about the average person who tries to be honest most of the time or all the time and tries to tell the truth regularly. But once in a while it happens. Once in a while is a situation where he gets pushed into a corner, so he has to say something not true. Okay, that's acceptable. But let's say you have someone who has an issue with honesty. He's too far away from honesty in general. He's too close to dishonesty. So then, says this anonymous Chacham, so then he has to correct that. And how do you correct that? By going to the extreme of honesty. You have to be very absolutely, resolutely truth-telling in all things. So you're right, such a person should not be Mishana, even if they hashal. He's not an individual who should avail himself of this particular pattern. And Rav Kook disagrees. Rav Kook says, essentially, do your self-improvement program on your own time. You want to train your midos, that's great. But you don't have the right to do that at the expense of the mitzvah l'shanos b'fnei hashalom. That if that's what the moment calls for, so that's what you're mechuyev to do. And the fact that you need to improve your midas ha'emes, says Rav Kook, that's not a legitimate reason to skip out on this obligation. So what do you think their machlokas is? Ari, you want a comment? You want a question?
I was going to comment that if he's fixing his midah of the line, he's not exactly helping his midah of not hurting other people.
Right, so that's so that's part of Rav Kook's point, right? That if he doesn't feel the balance is necessarily in the right place. Although you could say, all right, so he's not fixing everything at once, but he has to, like some of the Bali Musa recommended, you pick one midah at a time and you focus on that. So that by itself is not necessarily a refutation. But what seems to be the machlokas here between the anonymous Chacham and Rav Kook? What is
Rav Kook said there's no Isser of Sheker?
Mm-hmm.
And the anonymous Chacham said there is Isser of Sheker, and that's why you have to go to the opposite extreme.
Right. So just to say a little bit more, I think you're on the right track, is that essentially Rav Kook, presumably, like you said, believes that the Sheker here is not Hussar. So therefore, since you have the clear mandate of Shalom, so you don't have a right to say, well, I'm working on my self-improvement program, I am going to give up this mitzvah. However, the other opinion, the anonymous Chacham, was saying that this whole idea of the heter l'shanos b'fnei hashalom, it's maybe like we explained the first day, that basically there is a tension between two pretty much equal values. So the opinion of the Gemara that says, Munter says there's a reasonable decision to make to pick either one, to pick either Shalom or MS to prioritize. But that's assuming that they are basically in balance. That if somebody is already imbalanced, if somebody has too much of a weakness towards Sheker, so then that person doesn't have the same landscape to make the decision, and therefore maybe it's not an equal choice, and we should prioritize MS over Shalom for such a person. That's presumably what they're arguing about. And this could also be reflected in a view of Eliyahu of Lublin, in the Shilas and Chuvas Yad Eliyahu, who writes along similar lines that the Hetta of Shanas of Mehashalom, that's talking about if something comes up once in a while. It happens occasionally that you get stuck in a situation, so then, okay, it's legitimate to be Mashanat Mehashalom. But let's say L'chachila, to set up a life for yourself where every day you have to lie with Mehashalom, and it's essentially going to be a habit, it's going to be a lifestyle, so then that's going to be imbalanced. That maybe the whole premise of the Gemara here is that under average circumstances, these two midos are roughly in balance, and therefore you can have a legitimate choice to go one way or the other. But if the balance is set off by some other circumstance, either, like you said, because the person is too given towards sheker already, or because this hetter would have to be used too frequently, so then maybe that's going to tilt things the wrong way, and then maybe the cheshbon would have to be different. But presumably, Rav Kook would probably argue on that also, saying that no, that if this is what's necessary, so it's necessary every day, and even if it has to be repeated times.
Who is
the
consensus?
Yad Eliyahu. There is also a Chassam Sofer. I think there's a Chassam Sofer, because I saw it years ago, and more recently when I tried to look for it again, I couldn't find it. But the Mehashalom, I'm going to pretend it's there. And it's definitely an interesting shita, so I don't want to just ignore it. But Zachsam Sofer, which used to be in his Kiddushim to Shabbos, and maybe someday he'll return there, but I haven't been able to find it recently. But Zachsam Sofer used to say as follows, that we know that when it comes to tefillin, so there is a obligation, the reason we wear tefillin a very limited time period of time every day, as opposed to wearing them all day, or as opposed to other situations where you're not obligated in tefillin to take it on as a voluntary act. So we keep tefillin to a minimum, because there's a requirement that you have to stay tahor the whole time you have tefillin on. So Chassam Sofer writes that this doesn't mean only physically tahor, it means spiritually tahor as well. So it says the Chassam Sofer, what does that mean practically? It says one thing it means is that you can't lie with tefillin on. When you have tefillin on, you shouldn't lie. So, you'll ask, but aren't you not supposed to lie anyway? And he's always say that even without tefillin, you're not supposed to lie? So his response to that is, yes, but let's say it's a situation like Hetta v'shano supne hashalom, that even if they hashalom, one shouldn't lie if he's wearing tefillin. So if somebody comes over to you and says, you know, what did you think of my performance last night? So they say, hold on a second, and pick up your phone, and then you'll respond. Or as somebody I was discussing this with once said, then you can say all of a sudden that you're makbid not to talk with tefillin on even if the rest of the year. that's maybe totally on the shiloh. So what can you glean from that Chassam Sofer, if it indeed exists? Where does that chita show you?
Well, it seems to be saying that Shana Mehashalom is okay, but it's not like a chila. It's not like unless totally good situation to be in.
Right, I think that's
right. But on a bidyama level, then if you're forced into doing it, then you see that it's better to do that than to insult the person. But it's not when you're wearing tefillin, because when you're wearing tefillin, you're in a more cut over state. And it's not befitting to even to be Shana Mehashalom.
So I think you're definitely on the right track. I would say it a little bit sharper. Is that I think what he's saying here is that you could have thought that sheker b'nehashalom is not really sheker. It's nothing. It's completely harmless. So what he's saying is not that. What he's saying is that it is sheker. It's offensive to the tone. It's still wrong. But it's necessary. So the same way you may have to be Machal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh, so it's still Chol Shabbos, it's just what has to be done. So too here, so if you have to lie, Mehashalom, so okay, it was necessary, it's the right call, but it's still Sheker, it's still offensive to the Tefillin, while one could have thought, not that, one could have thought that maybe in such a case this is not Chol Sheker at all, and other than a general debate not to be talking with Tefillin on, it wouldn't be any worse than that. Hi.
Is this similar to the concept that's often brought up when it's Taruvos and let's say Mul falls into Chalaman's Bhatyam, that whether you should still eat the Chalaman?
It's a little bit similar. It really kind of crosses realms in a little bit of a tricky way that's not going to transfer perfectly.
It might be completely kosher, but you still shouldn't have it because it's like spiritually bad for you.
Assuming that's true. So that's itself a question. I guess you might find a better model in other cases. Let's say for example, related to what we were talking about yesterday, actually, about, let's say, by Dinim Darais and Dinim Darabanan, and that if you have something which is Asumana Torah, the idea that it's inherently bad, therefore, because it's Asumana Torah, so therefore maybe it's damaging even if you don't have full awareness of what you're doing. While if it was not Asur B'chetza, then it wouldn't necessarily have the same stigma to it, so to speak. So on some level, it's comparable that here it seems to me that some sofer is saying it's a so-called checker, it's a little objectionable. It's just necessary, so okay, so then it's necessary, but one shouldn't get the impression that it's not problematic.
It seems like the Kook and the Chacham both agree with the Chacham sofer that there is an element of checking.
Well, do we know the Rav Kook agrees? How do we?
Not 100% of Kook, for sure the Chacham.
Yeah, the Chacham. I think you're right. I think the Chacham and Chacham Sofer and the Adeliyah would all be on the same side in this issue. I think they're all lined up with the perspective that there is a component of Sheker, or the Sheker is not nothing. It's just that under some circumstances, it's mutter to use that shaker in order to keep the shalom. I think you're right. If they would all light up, I think Rav Kook would probably be on the other side.
Wow, from what that we said about Rav Kook, what would it indicate that there is something?
The fact that he says that even in a circumstance where you personally are too close to shaker, he would still say you simply don't have the right to run away from this mitzvah l'shanas of Me'ah Shalom, is an indication he probably thinks it's not Sheker. Now, you don't have to go so far. You could say it's not Mokra. Right, you could say that he just still assesses them differently. But I don't know if we have any indication that that's what he's saying. It's possible. But if we want to speak broadly and overly simplistically and assume that there's two sides, so then it could be that way. But you're right that it's possible that Rav Kook feels somewhere in the middle. That's just a question of how they're weighed. Okay. So, it's also important to point out, while we're talking about this Hefza Shal Sheker idea, a little bit more hashkafically in a sense, there is an important nekuda to point out, as was emphasized by Margaret Rabbi, by Yaron Levin, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, who pointed out regarding this din of Shanas Neha Shalom, that it also depends on the circumstances in a different way. That sometimes, you know, somebody will call your house and you're too busy to speak to him, and you know the person is the kind of person who's going to speak for a very long time, and you don't really have time right now to speak to this person. So let's say you tell your wife to tell this person that you're not home. So is that mutter with Me'ah Shalom?
Yeah.
Probably yes, right? Seems like that's a pretty straightforward case of mutter l'shanas with Me'ah Shalom. And that's probably true. However, as Rabbi Levin points out, that it would probably be wrong to do that not through your wife, but through your four-year-old son. Why? What's the issue? So the truth is, this is essentially a Gemara. It's a Gemara Masechta Sukkah, where the Gemara says that one should not promise something to a child and then not follow through with it because you're teaching the child to lie. So as the Gemara already addresses, and others ask, but you're not supposed to do that to anyone. So what's the chiddush of this din? So it seems like this din is even when there are otherwise heterot to do it. Even if it's a circumstance where it might, strictly speaking, be mutter, a child beneath a certain stage of chinuch is not really able to perceive that circumstances are different. So the only message a child will get when you tell them, get on the phone and say, Daddy's not home, is that it's okay to lie when you want to. So you tell your wife to say this, okay, so she'll understand that this is a circumstance where it's part of the hetzer of Mishanas Pnei Shalom, and that not Pnei Shalom, it's not mother. But we're concerned that a child who's beneath a certain stage of development may not fully appreciate this.
In this type of what age would be the cap?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Kids can understand lying in certain.
They can understand a woman too well. That's the problem.
Exactly.
Right. So it's a very tricky thing. It takes a lot of chachma, and I don't think there's objective numbers as to what the age is. But the issue would be, it's true that there is a point where it gets even harder because they become adept at lying, and then they get this message that okay, it's acceptable whenever it gets you out of a problem, which is also definitely not the message you want to send. So it takes a definite awareness of where your child is holding to know when it's appropriate and when it's not. And I think this is a parallel to a major machlokas that Moshe Feinstein had with many of his contemporaries. We have always managed recently to speak a lot of Lashon Hara, so this is about Lashon Hara as well. That Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva that was very controversial, that he wrote that it's wrong for a teacher, let's say a teacher of young children, to put a child on the spot and ask him to inform on other students in the class. Even though you might say that the information is necessary with Oelis, maybe a kid needs to be disciplined and the teacher needs to know about it. But, says Rav Moshe, it's wrong to ask the child to do this because you are teaching him to speak Lashon Hara. And many other poskim at the time, there were many who objected. Rav Moshe had to write another tshuva later, responding to his critics, and he didn't back down. But throughout, there's been machlokas about this. Rav Moshe Weishli, the Sefer and Vayikra, expresses very strong disagreement with the tshuva of Rav Moshe. And they say that there is a halacha of toelis, that sometimes it's necessary to say something if it's practically relevant. So why should the teacher ignore that part? If the teacher is there to educate the children, he should teach the children what's right and what's wrong, and that Lashon Hara is wrong, but toelis is necessary. So there was a lot of pushback against Rav Moshe for this tshuva, but presumably what Rav Moshe is saying is something along these lines, that there's a certain age where children are not really aware that circumstances are justifying a different path. So all they'll see from the story is that you should speak badly about the other kid. If they're old enough to recognize nuance and to recognize how different elements play against each other, okay, so then they can see that normally it's wrong, but here it's with the wells. But in a situation where they're too young to realize that, they're just going to get the message that you should speak badly about others. So it seems to be a very similar issue here, that yes, there are circumstances where it's mutter to be mishana, but a child who's too young to appreciate that circumstances could be different can come away with a message that sheker is okay. So this is a little bit of a different focus than the Chassam Sofer, but it's in the same spirit. The Chassam Sofer is noting that lying could still be spiritually damaging even if it's mutter. And here we're noting that it could still be educationally damaging even if it's mutter. And it might both be reasons not to necessarily avail yourself of the heter because of those concerns. Now with that, let's get to the... Yes?
I mean, is that really fitting into some sober? Because
it's a different focus. I mean, the way that they're similar is that I think they both say that there are times when, even though it's appropriate under some circumstances to say something not true with Nehash Shalom, it still is damaging. So
it's
some
not damaging in and of itself.
It is damaging in itself because it can be misleading educationally.
Okay.
So it's a different type of damage. That's where it's differentiated, that the some sofer is focusing on spiritual damage and the... this approach is focusing on educational matters, but they both are saying that this lying is not harmless. It may be mutter, but it has a consequence to it, and sometimes that consequence might mean that you have to take a different path. Hi.
Is this lying in front of the child, or is it asking the child to lie for you? It
could be both, but the case we described is asking the child to lie for you. You could have a problem in both cases, but certainly when the kid knows that he's being asked to lie, then the message could be that he might get to the Gemara and stuff is really more talking about lying to the child. But the case he describes is having the child do the lie. It could certainly have an effect like that, and Rabbi Levine's point is well taken. So with that introduction, let's consider the also controversial statement of the Sefer Chassidim. You guys get to see the Sefer Chassidim? Today's invention. So, I don't know if you saw it inside or you saw it in the Magen Avraham, in both places.
I saw it inside.
Right? So, the Sefer Chassidim has a psak, which the Magen Avraham quotes. It happens to be very controversial. Now, the Magen Avraham, in general, is a very influential posik. So, very often, when the Magen Avraham says something on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch, so his psak is often considered to be the last word. Especially before the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah came out, so he often took his own view on things. But certainly before the Mishnah Berurah, the Magen Avraham is highly authoritative. However, this psak of the Sefer Chassidim is controversial, and there are later tshuvas that were written in more recent generations where they take issue with the statement of the Sefer Chassidim. And it certainly seems to be quite surprising. But what does the Sefer Chassidim say? Right, so here we are attending school in Washington Heights. Right, so if you've ever walked through the streets in Washington Heights or in Yerushalayim or any other places, right, so you know that it often happens that you'll be approached by someone asking for money. Now, it may be the case that you may actually have money, but you don't want to give this person the money for any number of reasons. So, usually the minhag is to tell such people that you don't have any money. Even though that may not actually be true. But the assumption seems to be that it's preferable to say you don't have money than to say, you know what, it's funny you should ask. I just went to the ATM, I have a ton of money in my pocket. I'm just not interested in giving it to you. So we seem to all feel that that's probably not the best way to go about things. And that's pretty much the widespread minhag, to assume that this is a situation of mipnei hashom. And it's probably true, it probably is lahala. But the Sefer Chassidim thought, not so much. Right, what's the Sefer Chassidim's position? What you saw inside? What does he say?
You can't lie, you have to tell them that.
So you can't lie, why not?
Something.
But why is that different? Like, he quotes Sukkim about. It means the distinction between a mice that already happened versus a mice that didn't happen yet.
Okay, so that's his big distinction. And he has this chiluk here that things, the head of Rishonos Mipnei Hasholem is about the past, it's not about the present or the future. So this is going on in the present, and therefore there is no head or Rishonos. So this is a big chiddush, if you can imagine. Right, this is not something that we have in the Gemara that tells us. And it was also controversial. So I mentioned it's controversial in later tshuvas that were written arguing about it. And nowadays, we have a fancy Sefer Chassidim, as a Moser of Kook Sefer Chassidim, where there are a number of mefarshim that are written on Sefer Chassidim. So, for example, the Chidah wrote a parish on Sefer Chassidim. And Reuben Margolius wrote a parish on the Sefer Chassidim. So you can read the different Mefarshim, and they talk about what he's getting at. And they say, where did the Sefer Chassidim get this from? And the basic mahalach most of these Mefarshim have is that the Sefer Chassidim is assuming that this is a heter, the heter l'shanas l'pnei hashalom, is one that can be easily abused. Right? That if we allow the entire span of time, past, present, and future, to be included within our scope of shalom, so you could make a case that anything is natural. And that Chazal wanted, whoever was making this limitation, wanted it to be controlled, wanted it to be limited, and therefore the din is only that which is in the past and not that which is the present and the future. Now, there are many questions you could ask about, so maybe I swear to them. Yes?
What does it mean to say something in the past?
So it sounds like, I think it's itself not so clear, and we'll talk more about that in a second, It sounds like it means that if you're talking about something that happened yesterday, so that you can fudge it. But talking about whether you have money now, that's not under this category. Now, there are many questions you could ask about this. I mean, besides just the basic question of where does he get it from? But does this work well with all the examples that we've seen from Gemaras and elsewhere about cases where we know it is Matzah L'Shabbos with Nei HaShalom? How about our Gemaras? Does it work with Kalanava Chasuda?
No. Yeah. Well, according to what we said about Hill, they're preemptively going and telling her.
Right, so does the safe position work with that at all?
No.
Doesn't seem like it, right?
It works with the Mutter of the Shalos, but not
the Mutter. Oh, so maybe it works with the Mutter, except he's saying that there are circumstances where it's not even Mutter. I mean, I think you're right that it's closer to the mutter logic than mitzvah l'shanos.
No, in the case of the Gemara for the mutter was in the past already.
Oh, because that one case, the case of the brothers. The first opinion, that's the end. The first case of the brothers is because in the past, maybe. I guess it depends how you define the past. You know, that he said this, he didn't say this. But Kalav Chasuda is difficult to fit into this category.
Shalom.
Sorry?
Shalom
is also difficult, right?
Shmuel, yeah.
Right, Shalom Shmuel. If you look in the Marashah, so he has a way of explaining, I put that in the list also,
yeah.
Then figure out exactly what was going on there. That also seems to be difficult for this. What about Masechta? Does Masechta work with this? So that's some of the Mefarsh. Yeah, it works.
Yeah, it's like what you learned in the past.
What did you learn in the past? That could be. Some of the Mefarsh.
No, it's asking what you know right now.
Right.
So, what do you know?
So it doesn't sound like it works so well. Right. So again, if you look at these Mefarsh from the bottom of the Sefer Chassidus, so they raise that question. So some of them say, well, that's because of modesty. Modesty is also a legitimate area, so that also is not going to get out of hand. Halavaya, worst problem should be people that are too modest. You know, that's not going to be abused too much. So there are attempts to fit it all in. I think maybe you could say as follows. Maybe we could understand the Sefer Chassidim a little differently. And that maybe what he's saying is the following. That the Hefer, the Shanos of the Hashon, as has already been intuited, I think as Morty was getting at, is according to the Sefer Chassidim, there's not a blank check, there's no mystery check. I think we can already guess that the Sefer Chassidim is probably in the camp of those who hold that there is Sheker, it is a concern, but that the Sheker is outweighed by the Chiyuv of Shalom. So maybe what the Sefer Chassidim is as follows, tell me what you think of this. But maybe what he's saying is that if you have no choice, right, if you're stuck, your only two options are either say something not true, or start a fight. So then he'd say, yeah, Mutter L'Shanos with Nei HaShalom. But if you have three choices, and the third choice is neither Sheker nor contentious, so then you should be obligated to take that third choice.
Who would disagree?
Well, it depends on how you define the availability of the third choice. Because maybe what he's saying is as follows. Right, in a scenario where somebody asks you for money, so you really have three choices. Choice number one is to lie and say, sorry, don't have any money. Choice number two is to start a fight and say, it's funny, I have so much money, it's ridiculous, but none of it's real. But there's a third choice also. What's the third choice?
That's
anything, probably not going to get you so far. But you can try it, see what happens. But you could actually give him the money. Now you might say, you know, that's not a viable possibility for me, and that might be true. And again, the halacha, I don't think that this is really what's advocated. But maybe what the Sefer Chassidim is saying is that if there's at all a third possibility, so then you have to pursue that third possibility rather than compromise on either of our two major values. And if that's the case, maybe what he means by the past versus the future or the present, is he's saying that if you have a scenario where the facts are already established, you have no control over the Messias right now. It's all about something that is already. So you only have now two choices, either fudge what happened or start a fight. Okay, so Mutter L'Shanos with Nei HaShalom. But if it's in the present or the future, meaning that the facts are still in play, you can still affect what's going to happen. So then, says the Sefer Chassidim, you're obligated to pursue that third option while it's still available to you, rather than compromise either value of Sheker or Shom. So perhaps that's what the Sefer Chassidim is getting at, that maybe that's the issue that we're talking about here, and maybe that's why we have such a concern. So, just mention Api Derech HaDrush, maybe it's also relevant to this, and I'll just add a few more points, that last week we speculated a little bit about what does the Isser Midvar Sheker Tirchak mean? Why is the word Tirchak used? It's not one of the standard words that we have for a prohibition. We have other words that more clearly identify something as Aser. So what's Peshat in the language Tirchak? So we mentioned a couple of theories as to what Tirchak is meant to convey. So the Sefer Aznayim Matarah, beautiful Sefer on Chumash, by Belitzkarav, Zalman Saratsky. So he writes, what's Peshat on Tirchak? He says that the idea is that we can't say never lie, because there are circumstances where you'll have to lie. We have a heter of Lashanah of Meshal. We have instances where Sheker is going to be necessary. So what can we say? We can say Tirchok, that you should try to do whatever is possible to avoid being in a circumstance where you have to say something natural. If you find yourself in that circumstance, okay, then you're going to have to say something. You're going to have to preserve Shalom, even if that means not being strictly honest. But because the value is so significant to Emes, and because Sheker really is a concern, if you care about this, you'll try to do what you can to avoid being in such circumstances in the first place. So we could also then suggest that that's Pshat on the Pasuk in Zechariah, V'emes v'shalom ahavu, that the Pasuk is saying that the four Tanesim, Yul, Beis Ahud, L'Sasim, L'Simcha, that Tisha B'Av, Shavasim, V'Tamas, V'Sar, V'Tevis, will ultimately be holidays, V'emes v'shalom ahavu, that perhaps the point is when we're able to live lives that are such that we can observe both Emes and Shalom without having to compromise one or the other, so then that's the situation that's going to bring us to the time of redemption, that the fast days will be observed as holidays. So the mentality of Dvar Sheker Tirchak is trying to do what you can to make sure you don't have to compromise either value on behalf of the other, but if you're forced to, that's what you're going to be left with. So maybe that's what the Sefer Chassidim means when he says that we only have this limited range in which it can be permitted. So just to mention, I have a few minutes left to mention a few other ways in which this comes up. First of all, we saw Ben Yonah in Shari Tshuva. So Ben Yonah has a system of designating different categories of lies. Says there are different types of lies that exist, and it's hard to really clearly understand all these categories, but basically says that some lies benefit you, and some lies don't have any benefit for you. Some lies hurt someone else, and some lies don't hurt anyone else. So there's a whole category of different madrigos, and he basically says there that the Hefer L'Shanas of Hashalom only applies to a completely neutral lie, a lie that doesn't hurt anyone else, which is a very important point. Right? This is very easily misapplied, so it's very important before we finish the subject to emphasize that any time that there is a hezek to somebody else, I think it would be universally agreed that there would not be a heter l'shanos b'nei hashalom. Certainly if it's one-sided shalom, and like we mentioned the other day, in terms of cases where it's clear the Isser Dvar Sheker Tirchak does apply, like perjury, you know, Maisa Bezdin, or fraud, or you're hurting someone else, it's important to emphasize that those are not scenarios where one should ever avail themselves of a heter l'shanos b'nei hashalom. So it's also important to emphasize, because this is also easily misunderstood, that, and we'll discuss a few more cases in the next few minutes, but I think it's important to kind of have this as a caveat, that I don't think Chazal are necessarily telling us with the sugya that it's necessarily a good idea to lie in Hashem. Now, one could ask that maybe if I lie in order to preserve harmony, let's say in your marriage relationship, if you say things that aren't true, in order to keep the peace, so maybe you'll eventually erode the trust between husband and wife, and maybe that will be very damaging. So that might be true, that might not be true. I don't think Chazal is necessarily taking a stand on this. I don't think the Gemara is necessarily saying that one should always assume that lying is the best path towards shalom. I think what the Gemara is saying is that sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But let's say you could assess the situation as such that in this particular case, you consult with all the psychologists and all the experts and all the relationship gurus, and it's clear that in this particular case that MS is not the friend of shalom. So if that's the case, you might still say, all right, but what can I do? I have an issue in Var Sheker Tuf, and I'm not allowed to say anything false. So to that, the Gemara says, no, it's not true that if it's clearly Pnei HaShalom, so then there is a Hekel L'Shamos. But I don't think the Gemara is taking a stand on whether it's advisable or not. So I've seen people get very heated about this point. They say, oh, why is the Gemara advocating, you know, lying between spouses? Things like that. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think that we can leave that question open when it's advisable and when it isn't. But what the sugi is addressing is from a halachic perspective that if you were to determine that it is advisable from an interpersonal perspective to do this, so is it mutter? So then the answer could be that yes, it is mutter if we can ascertain or confidently believe that this is the path to take.
Hi. It's like how in the Torah, there could be a mitzvah, but that it's not necessarily recommended. For example, divorce.
Yes, a little bit like that, except that here I'm saying more that maybe it is recommended. I say maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't think the Gemara necessarily should be taken as specifically recommending it. I think the Gemara is addressing the permissibility of it, and the advisability of it is a separate question. It might be a good idea, it might not be a good idea. You know, there are some who maintain that complete and total honesty is the only approach to a healthy marriage. In some circumstances, it's hard to believe that that's always the case. This dress makes me look bad, so it's hard to believe that that's necessarily a situation where saying the blunt opinion is really recommended. So I think essentially what Chazal is saying is that if you are confident that this is a circumstance where this is the right path, so then the halacha doesn't object. But not necessarily that it's always the right path, or that that's to be jumped to as an assumption. So just to mention a few more points about this discussion. So in terms of Rabbeinu Yonah's statement, so that the hetter only applies to these completely neutral lies, where it doesn't hurt anyone else, or it doesn't benefit you at all. Take the first part, that doesn't hurt anyone else, I think that is generally agreed upon. The second part is a little bit trickier. Because, for example, Rabbeinu Yonah writes over there that Gnevas Das, which is a circumstance where you are getting someone else's false goodwill, you're getting someone else's goodwill based on false pretenses that you're either purposely creating or allowing them to stand. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that Gnevas Das would not be permitted with Bnei HaShalom. So the truth is, you have to see whether or not that's really agreed upon by later poskim. Because, for example, there is a tshuva, and the tshuva is Sheva HaBahasi. I'm sure you all have the Sheva HaBahasi in your makom, but in case you don't, the Sheva HaBahasi is written by one of the Dayanim of Bells, Shammai Kahas Gross. So he has a tshuva where somebody was asked the following. It says that he runs the fund, he has a tzedakah fund, which is used to support poor Talmidei Chachamim. So he wants to give from this fund to a certain poor Talmid Chacham. But he knows that this Talmid Chacham is too proud to accept tzedakah. He's not going to be willing to take it. So what this guy wants to do is, he doesn't want to tell the Talmud Chacham that it comes from these donations, it comes from this fund. He wants to say, listen, I'm a big fan of your Svarim, I'm a big fan of your work, I want to support your Torah, so I want to give you a gift. And he won't say that it comes from the Tzedakah fund. So is that mutter to do? What do you think? All right.
Well, first off, that should be a little different because that's not necessarily lying.
So what is it? So identify that point.
But it's a lack of, it's an omission of.
He is close to lying, right?
Close to lying, but
he's misleading him, right? And he's misleading him in not a totally value neutral way.
But is misleading and lying the exact same?
No, they're not the exact same, although it seems to be like it's a subset of it. That it seems to be that this is not totally neutral, but essentially what's going to happen here is that the person giving this money is going to benefit personally, because the recipient will think that it comes from his pocket, that he's supporting his Torah, and really it isn't, it's coming from other donations. So he's getting goodwill under false circumstances, so really it's an Isser of Gnei Vistas that's relevant here. So the Sheva Dr. Hussi says, but yeah, it's Mutter, because this is a situation of Mifnei HaShalom, and Gnei Vistas, he assumes, is a subset of Sheker, happens to be a big Machlokas Rishonim, what really is the source for Gnei Vistas. I don't think it's an aspect of Gnei. But he's saying it's an aspect of Sheker. So Sheker is a hector of the Neshamas of Bnei HaShalom, so is a hector of Bnei Vistas of Bnei HaShalom also. So you could question that. He might be right, because Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't agree with this. Rabbeinu Yonah says Bnei Vistas is not Mutter of Bnei HaShalom. So it gets to this question a little bit, that should we assume that it's only the pure neutral type of Sheker that we're talking about, which really isn't prohibited when it's Bnei HaShalom? Or is it that there are Isurim here in general which might simply be outweighed by Shalom, so even if you are benefiting personally, like it's a Gnei Vistas situation, it might still be permitted. So in general, this is also a question that the post can talk about. Are we, when we say Bnei HaShalom, how literal are we? Are we talking about only Machlokas? That can be avoided by Sheker? Or has Shalom got a broader definition? It means general halachic values, the general ends justify the means. How broadly are we defining Shalom? It's interesting that there is a discussion, some of the posts can have, some think it's not much of a discussion, but we reviewed last week the question of tshuva for Lashon Hara. So one of the things that the posts can discuss is if you try to undo an act of Lashon Hara that you did, so can you speak falsely in order to counteract the Lashon Hara? Or let's say it's not even something that you did, but let's say somebody puts you on the spot, so you haven't done anything wrong yet, but somebody asks you a question, if you answer it truthfully, it's going to be Lashon Hara. And if you don't answer it, it's going to be Lashon Hara by implication. So are you allowed to say something false in order to avoid Lashon Hara? So this is a discussion the post can have, and it's interesting. Some of them wonder, should we make a distinction between what we call nowadays Rechilus and what we call Lashon Hara? Right? If we work off the Rambam and the Chofetz Chaim's designations, so Lashon Hara is when you speak badly about somebody, you disparage them, and Rechilus is when you tell Reuven that Shimon said bad things about him. So the way it's often understood is that they have different themes to them. That Lashon Hara is about disparaging someone, about hurting them reputationally. And Rechilus is about starting fights. So there are some who argue that maybe it should only be mutter to say something untrue in order to avoid Rechilus specifically. Because that's all about starting fights. So to avoid Rechilus is b'pnei HaShalom. But in the case of Lashon Hara, so the sheker you'd be doing is to avoid an Aveira, it's not necessarily Shalom specifically, and maybe that should be different. Then other postmen didn't think there was really so much of a difference between the two. So it's an interesting question. We'll also just mention that there is a surprisingly common discussion. You find a number of postmen who discuss this issue, that this must have come up many more times than you think would logically happen. But let's say you have a circumstance where you have a couple who's married, and the wife is pregnant, and she's about to have what seems to be a firstborn boy, and the husband is expecting to throw a big pigeon event. And what the husband doesn't know is that the wife was pregnant before he ever met her, and that this is not her firstborn. So he doesn't know about this. And to tell him would create great tension in their marriage. So is it mutter for the wife to conceal this from the husband and to let him go ahead with a false pigeon event in order not to cause friction in the marriage? So this was discussed again by a surprising number of poskim. The truth about this, the truth is Maharshag, who you mentioned him the other day. I think he was a Talmud of the Maharshik. He was a Talmud of some sofer. He's a grand Talmud of some sofer. Rabbi Yosef has a truth about this. Mordechai Eliyahu, his Rabbi's successor, has a truth about this. There's quite a few truths about this. But the general consensus seems to be that it's mutter nashal, that in order to preserve the peace, so you're allowed to countenance a false sham pigeon event in order to provide a basis for shalom to endure. Some of the posts can discuss that maybe it's kedai for the wife to say to the husband that she's a suffix, a bas levi somewhere, so maybe you shouldn't make a bracha, but others are okay with that too, even with a bracha. They consider this to be Bnei Hashalom, which is parenthetically, again, this is what I said a few minutes ago, this is one of the cases where some people read about this and they say, oh, but it's terrible, why should the husband not know about the wife's past? It's dishonest, the whole story. So again, I don't think there's necessarily an assessment here about what is best from their marriage from a social counseling point of view, but if the assumption is that this is what's necessary, so then does the halacha object? So here's what the poskim are saying, that the halacha doesn't object. I think Yitzi was our first in the day.
But would you or would you not say the same thing by something like Mamzerus, that, you know, that a wife should keep from her husband that, you know, this child is not yours?
Mamzerus is a much more serious question, which would definitely need a significant post-take involvement, because Mamzerus is an isser to... It's an issue on others to marry him here, so you're not dealing with the same level of issue. Now, Mamzerus has other components to it, because Mamzerus also requires the idea for the Mamzerus in order to be us, so that might be a different angle to pursue, and how exactly that fits in is a little bit outside the scope of this discussion.
So would this child be considered a bechor?
Will actually not be considered before for the mitzvah of pigeon event, maybe for the purposes of nachla for the father.
How would the father would think the kid is a bechor?
Right. So for the purposes of nachla it might be considered a bechor, but for the purpose of the mitzvah of pigeon event,
entire life he has to do, has to conduct himself a life. I can think of off the top of my head.
It doesn't have so many attributes.
Just fasting on.
Right.
On
that's not. That's easier to deal with. So Mechayim to go to the Siyum Bisafi might be the hardest issue.
Could he serve in the Mishkan before it was transferred to Levi?
Right. That's a very nice and right now working and trying to clarify that one as it comes through. But the truth, as I mentioned, that's surprising how much this issue has been dealt with in Postman, because you wouldn't think it happens exactly like that so many times, but there are good number of chubas about it, but a much, much more common scenario, which really brings us back to our general subas issues and our very specific subas issues that we talked about in the introduction. So, what about Sula, the Miksuba? Right, let's say you have a circumstance where the Kala is not a Sula, so she's entitled to really a lower level of Ksuba, right? That's our homosefta. But she doesn't want this, let's start with the easier case, and she doesn't want this announced in public. And so the ksuba is generally read at the wedding. So she doesn't want this ksuba to be read out loud, but announces that she's not a ksuba. So is it mutter to fudge that and to read the ksuba as a ksuba? So Post can talk about this, or Moshe Feinstein has chuvos about this, or Moshe Sterbuch has chuvos about this. So that scenario is a little bit simpler. It's pretty much agreed across the board that the rabbi who's reading the Ksuba can read whatever he wants. And that in fact, that even if it says that she's not a psula in the Ksuba, but he's going to read out loud that she's a psula so as not to embarrass her, as not to cause problems. So that is pretty widely accepted as mutter.
I was going to say that this issue, or the fix to this issue, could actually lead to the problem that our mission has about.
Right, so that's an interesting question, right? So even though you might worry about that, you might say, oh, you know, it's interesting that you could imagine that scenario being the next mission in our kayak, right? And say that the wife says, oh, don't you remember at our wedding they read Sula? And the husband responds, no, we just did that so it's not to embarrass you, but in real Sula.
Say,
right.
You still
want
concerned about embarrassing her. So
right, well, that's what tends to happen, unfortunately, by the divorce stage, right? Unfortunately, that's the whole problem, that whole attitude shifts from Israel to Meirev, and what he wasn't worried about then.
But suppose that in it would depend to some degree on society, in that if not being a virgin is seen as grounds for divorce in the society that there is, you have it's much less permissible to lie about.
It takes on a much greater chumra to it.
Yeah.
It's not just right. So, in the scenario that we're talking about, the easier case, as you said, is where the ksuba says whatever it says, but the fact that it's read publicly, so and this happens, Mike's a holy yom, you know what happens there, all the time. It's a much more prevalent situation than the pigeon event case, I think, but it certainly happens all the time, especially if it's manazat, that rabbis left and right are reading ksubas at the chuppah and changing words, because it's not necessarily going to be announced publicly that a kal would otherwise be expected to be a psula is not a psula. What's a little trickier, but yet also has basis lahakel, is what about actually writing a psula ksuba for such a person who's not a psula? So there is a little bit more of a tricky question, but there is grounds lahakel there also, many great poskim are making on this as well, assuming that the chassan knows the truth. That, let's say, and this also comes up pretty often, so the chassan knows she's not a psula, but the rest of the world, we don't want them to know. And they're going to put the ksuba up on the wall, or even they're not, but they're afraid just at the time of the wedding, too many people are going to see the ksuba. And even if it's read out loud one way, it's still just too uncomfortable the idea that somebody else will look at it and see what it really says. So there, in this case also, even without that consideration, so many posts can hold that the husband has the right to commit himself to a psula ksuba even if she's not actually a psula. So as long as she's not deceiving him on that front, they're just deceiving the rest of the world. It's not the gay to them, but it's not a substantive problem for the rest of the world. It's only a substantive issue for him. So if he's okay with it, that he can not only have a ksuba read as a psula, but actually write a psula ksuba. Now, there are problems, because let's say afterwards they get divorced, so that won't be a problem. Let's say he dies, right, and she becomes an almana, and now she wants to marry a kohen. So theoretically, there's a risk that if she was actually psula lakuna for whatever happened beforehand, that could get obscured, because one could say, all right, I know she's an almana from this marriage, so that doesn't pass over with Huna. And the ksuba says she was a psula, so she was probably a psula beforehand, so then we'll assume she's kosher with Huna, and she might not be. But whether or not that's enough of a problem to get in the way, so many feel that it's not. So there were a couple of hands up, and this is hands up first, and the Aryeh and Sam. Okay, Aryeh?
Would it make any difference for the Edom who signed the ksuba?
So again, it reflects the fact that this is what the husband agrees to. So if you assume that the husband is allowed to accept this upon himself, even if it's not true, so then the Edom will sign to that the husband is committing himself to this psula ksuba, even if it's somebody who's not actually a psula. And then, by the way, if that's the case, so to put it back in our parak, it's Shmuley's question, so the husband's not going to have a taina, not going to have a successful taina, because even if the metzias was that she wasn't a psula, but if he really accepted the ksuba like that, he would still be chayiv for it. But the first case we described, where he never accepted it in the first place, but they just read it out loud, and she'll say, oh, but what about the fact that we have the wedding video, we could listen to the rabbis up there saying psula, and he's saying, no, it's not true, so that's an interesting shayla. I haven't seen anyone actually talk about that. Lalacha, do you think that that
could
might...
Could be a Migo case, no?
Sorry?
Could be a Migo case.
Right, so do you think that that could fit in well with our Mishnah, and that would be an interesting case. Sammy, you have your hand up?
Yeah, is it a possibility to just write two ksubos, maybe...
That is very problematic, having two shtaros, you know, having one.
What if you make something puzzle on the first one? Something smaller?
Yeah, you know, sometimes people do that, but in general, it's not great policy because, well, that's also our paragraph. We're afraid of somebody having two shtaros that they can collect with. So that's also not the smoothest kind of result.
It's better to write a wrong two than that, saying you're weighing two options. It might be better than writing a false ksuba.
Well, it depends on what you mean by false. You know, writing a real false ksuba is a problem. The question is that if we assume that this is legitimate, that the husband is allowed... If we don't think that the husband is really allowed to accept it, then you're right. For sure not going to write a false ksuba that's actually false. But if it's just factually false as far as her physically being a psula, but he has agreed to accept, you know, that's what... that's how some poskim understand that...
You could do, like, oops, Yeshia...
And no time to read.
Like, oops, it's Shia. We have this new data on the ksuba, but we have to take out this small one that everybody's going to look at.
Right, not want to attract attention at all. No, whatever it is. But this is, again, a more commonly developed issue. And this is an issue where, again, these issues of shalom are generally considered to dominate as long as the consequences aren't beyond the mundane consequences that are normally associated with it. Okay, so let's just quickly pass what we spoke about today, and then we'll dive into mincha, and God willing, tomorrow we'll start with the sugya of Simchas Chas and Mekala that's on our daf, and as we mentioned, this whole sugya as well, and the question could be framed, is this about general issues of Sheker versus Shalom, or is Ketz and Rakim and Hakala a special din that's a function of the mitzvah of Simchas Chas and Mekala? So that'll segue into our discussion tomorrow when we start that topic head on, that specific mitzvah and what it involves. Okay, so just quickly review what we spoke about today. We spoke about the Rama, who says that Shalom is winning out over other dinim like Sheker, and even win out over what's a Shemra. Very hard to imagine how that could be. And indeed, there were those who felt the Rama never really said that. We talked about the Rambam Shil Hazal, and about the Anonymous Hoffman, who said that therefore somebody who is extreme in Sheker is not allowed to Mishantan HaShalom, and the Prof disagreed and said, do that on your own time, because you have a mitzvah you can't skip out on. We thought that was totally unknown to judgment on what was going on here. We talked about the question of not making it a habit, like the Yadol talks about. We talked about the possible statement somewhere, the Chassam Sofer, that to lie with the Philodon is a problem, even if they have Shalom. Seems to show that there is a Chepz of Sheker that causes spiritual problems, even if it's mutter. And we talked also about the educational concern that if you do this to a child, or if you use the child as an instrument of this sheker, so even though it's mutter for an adult, but it could mislead the child, and that perhaps parallels from Machlokas from Moshe Feinstein and other poskim about eliciting lashon hara of the toelis from the child. And then we talked about the Sefer Chasidim, who has this chiddush that only things in the past, but not in the present, the future, are subject to sheker. And Mefarshim, they're all discussed where he's coming from, how does it work with the Gemaras, what does it mean, and they suggest that it's basically a limitation so that things should get out of hand. And we said a little bit differently, that what he's saying is that if you have two choices, you're entitled to then be Meshaker to avoid losing Shalom. But if you have a third choice at all, you're Mechleiv to take it, maybe that's what he means, that things in the past are things that are set in stone, you can't do anything about. But things that you can still control, you're obligated to control them. And set the board to the Mazai and the Torah, that Mitvar Sheker Tirchak means you can't say never lie, because there are times when you have to. But we can say Tirchak, do whatever you can to avoid circumstances where that becomes necessary, and perhaps that also reflects that point. And we talked about also in terms of parameters of what's considered to be Shalom and what is not considered to be Shalom, and what's considered to be acceptable Sheker. We talked about Ben Yonah's nine categories, and how he only says when it's pure, innocent Sheker with no benefit to you or harm to anyone else, only then is it mutter of the Hashem, and not in a situation like Kneivus Das. We mentioned the one in contemporary Tshuva where he did allow Kneivus Das, Kneivus Hashem, seems to be connected to that question. And we talked about whether one can lie to avoid Lashon Hara, whether is there a distinction between Rechilus and Lashon Hara, because Rechilus is all about fight specifically. Is that maybe more legitimate than the Lashon Hara scenario? And then we talked about the recurring issue of Posium, about allowing a unjustified pigeon event to take place in order to avoid telling the husband the truth and causing strife within them. And to discuss the more common shaila of putting, at least reading Psuma Mitzuba, maybe putting Psuma Mitzuba in order not to bring about embarrassment. And then two important caveats to keep in mind, Halacha L'maisa, that while we clearly do have this Hat L'Shat Ne'ashalom, that we should not assume it applies in any case where the Sheker is very consequential, like in Maisa Bezdin, or where it's going to harm anyone else for sure, but not have Ne'ashalom under those circumstances. And that we're not making any statement here about what the most advisable path is. That could vary based on the assessment of other factors. But this whole sugya presumably is saying that if we could ascertain or confidently believe that falsehood is the most harmonious path in this particular case, then the halacha does not object and in fact maybe commands you to follow that path. Okay, so we'll stop here. Who wants to daven for us? Sammy, you want to daven for us?